Hi, friends. It's Vin Scully. It's time for
Dr. Clapper.
In sports, there's winning and losing and getting injured. That's why there's Dr. Clapper.
Dr. Clapper is the former head of orthopedic surgery at Cedars-Sinai.
The Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper, presented by Cedars-Sinai.
Hey, Dr. Clapper.
How are you?
Saturday mornings from 7 to 9.
Silence is golden when you can't think of a good answer.
Yes, Doc, I love your show.
Now, here he is, Dr. Robert Clapper.
The other night, you had a dream, and it happened to come through tonight.
It came true tonight. We worked so hard. It was a hard-fought game, and we finally got a championship, and it feels great.
You said you've always dreamed to win a championship. Is it what you dreamed of?
Oh, it's everything and more. I mean, you have the Laker colors falling from the ceiling, the fans going crazy. I got the hat on and everything covering my throat. It feels great.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. That's the great Ahmad Rashad interviewing Kobe Bryant after his first championship. And he wore number 8. We just celebrated our 17th championship, dedicated to Kobe. 1 + 7 = 8. This one was for you, Kobe, the Black Mamba. At 8:15, my guest today is going to be the great David Davis, my favorite author in sports. And he's written a fascinating book I encourage you all to get called Wheels of Courage. His analysis of history, the pages just jump right out at you. The detail. It's real. It's history. This is not a made-up story. I can't wait till they make this book into a movie one day. But it's all about the World War II veterans. And my dad fought in World War II in Germany. He was an anti-aircraft. Dad, did you ever kill anybody? Nah, Robbie, I just pulled the trigger. I don't know what happened. Yeah, meantime, when he died at his funeral, there were all these medals from World War II. So he obviously did something, but he didn't want to talk about it. He just did what he had to do. These men were incredible. And that's what this book is about. But some of them, bullets, landmines, they were paralyzed. They were injured during World War II. And when they came back to this country, medicine was not at the point where we could offer them a lot of hope. But these were young, vibrant men. And they were, many of them, athletes. And they did not want to stop being vibrant men and athletes, even though they were in a wheelchair. And that's what this book is about. It's inspiring. And it made me think all week about the world of art, the world of sports, the power of the wheelchair, the vibrancy that still exists in a person who's in a wheelchair. So the greatest detective show growing up, it was called Ironside. It ran from 1967 to 1975, starring Raymond Burr. He's in a wheelchair. He was a detective, chief of police. But it made you have to think, how is he going to figure out how this case went down? He's a detective, but he's in a wheelchair. Listen to his voice. Steve, let's play number 7.
They're sending it over, along with Parker's.
Ironside. Yes, Dr. Wilson. Oh? No doubt about it? Thank you for telling me. All right, goodbye. The ME's office. Seems the slug they dug out of Barker came from 32.
Then we didn't get it.
His partner?
Why don't we pry open a clam?
And the next scene is him moving his wheelchair into the prison to open up the jail, sitting next to the guy who shot whoever it was. He's not running fast anywhere. But it was his brain that he was exercising, that I was exercising, watching this show. Later, I find out that the theme song, which is a song you never heard this type of music before, because it was the first time a synthesizer was used, 1967, Quincy Jones, when he was asked to make the theme song, said he was inspired to make a song that sounded like the squeaky wheelchair, metal on metal. Let's listen to the theme song that Quincy Jones wrote for a detective show about a detective in a wheelchair. Let's go to number 8. to Quincy Jones, he heard the power of the wheelchair and made a song that you never heard before. It is so vibrant and so exciting. Listen to Quincy Jones describe it was the wheelchair that inspired him. Number three.
The symbol to me was like an onomatopoeia, really, because of the wheelchair. I don't know. That's when you go with your instincts, really. And I don't know that to me, that it, without using the contemporary rhythmic elements and everything else, and the semblant that had that metallic, and it is a serious Eastern European, you know. It seemed like the right thing.
Metal on metal. That's what he's hearing. Like two hammers hitting each other. Number four.
Hard metal mallets. A beautiful, beautiful color. It's very, it can be sinister, and it's, I don't know, it's just a nice color for drama. I've used in a lot of pictures. I used some in Heat of the Night, in the Simulon, yeah. I love the Simulon.
Don't you love when he uses the word color to describe the sound of mallets? He's painting pictures with his music. Just like Chick Hearn painted pictures with words, and no one was better than Vin Scully. That's what Quincy Jones is doing. Number five.
And then when you did the main title for the first season of Ironside, you used a Moog synthesizer.
That's right.
Which I believe was the first instance of a synthesizer in television.
Absolutely. We used to go to Paul Beaver's house. Johnny Mandel, myself, and Dave Grusin, always going over there to search for new, fresh color sounds for film, you know, because, you know, being distinctive is a very important thing in background scoring. And he gave us the first Fender Rhodes before it was even used in records. You know, the Fender Rhodes, he had a touch-sensitive clavinet like Stevie used in Superstition.
And finally, number six.
Nova cards and all these crazy instruments, you know. And so he said, here's the thing I just got from Robert Moog back east, you know, try it out. It looked like a telephone switchboard then. In fact, Mike Boddicker was one of the players later on. I used to call him Lily for Lily Tomlin, you know, because he looked like a switchboard operator with cords around his neck. But Paul Beaver played on that session, and I think it's the first time the public ever heard a synthesizer.
We heard the synthesizer, Quincy Jones, because of you. And you heard the synthesizer when you heard the wheelchair. That's what inspired you to make the most incredible theme song for Ironside. You hear things the rest of us don't hear. And Vin Scully sees things the rest of us don't see. And his gifted storytelling is just the greatest. I want you to listen to Vin Scully seeing Roy Campanella in a wheelchair. All he sees are cell phones twinkling in the stadium. And this is enough to recall the tribute to Roy Campanella that the Dodgers had in 1959, because Roy Campanella, the great Brooklyn Dodger catcher who won the World Series for them in 1955, who caught two no-hitters for Carl Erskine for the Brooklyn Dodgers, one of the greatest catchers of all time. He still holds the record for the highest percent, 57%, of people who try to steal a base on Roy Campanella. He got them out. It's still the record. One of the greatest catchers of all time. But when the Brooklyn Dodgers decided to move to Los Angeles, which they did, January before the LA Dodgers season started in 1958, Roy Campanella was in a car accident and now was confined to a wheelchair. The Los Angeles Dodgers never had Roy Campanella, but they made a tribute to him. Before Dodger Stadium was built, they were playing in the LA Coliseum. And listen to Vin Scully calling a game, but having the memory of the power of the wheelchair to him, of Dodger catcher Roy Campanella. Let's go to number two.
There's something new this year, the twinkling lights of the cell phones. It always brings back the memory of Roy Campanella, the Coliseum, 1959. They used matches then.
Number three.
93,000 people that night. lit matches in the Coliseum. Tribute to Roy. Pee Wee Reese pushing Campanella out to the mound in a wheelchair. And Campanella pointing out 93,000. That's my number backwards. He wore 39.
That's the numbers game again. 17th champion, 1 plus 7 is 8. Kobe's number as a rookie. But Vince Scully now, thinking about that sight that we all saw, thinking about the wheelchair that Roy Campanella, his favorite catcher of all time, and how inspiring he was to see this great man in his wheelchair. Instead of a chair, he says it's a throne. Number 4.
One ball and two strike. Yep. The year was 59. A remarkable year. Unfortunately, Roy had to enjoy it from a chair. But enjoy it he did. His chair suddenly became a throne. 1-2 to Crone.
What a gift. Let's listen to what Roy Campanella sounds like talking about Branch Rickey, the Dodger owner who brought Jackie Robinson in 1947, but brought Roy Campanella in 1948, a year later, the two men breaking the color barrier, not only in sports, but in life in America. Listen to Dodger catcher Roy Campanella, number 1.
He called Jackie and I into his office, and he said, "Now, I have stuck my neck out the window for you fellas to play in the major league. Please don't let them chop it off." I'll never forget those words.
Vince Scully's love affair for Jackie Robinson and Roy Campanella runs deep because he became the Brooklyn Dodger announcer in 1950. The Brooklyn Dodgers were disrespected. You had the New York Yankees. You had the New York Giants. These were powerhouse teams. And the lowly Brooklyn Dodgers, they're never going to do anything except be made fun of. But that's who Vin Scully had to announce. And in 1955, this team of nobodies beat Goliath. This is where the love affair comes from. Let's listen to Vin Scully recounting the small stadium, Ebbets Field, and how this snowball effect of emotion happened to him with the Brooklyn Dodgers and their star catcher, Roy Campanella. Number 9.
Well, first of all, to the people today, they see big stadiums or carefully architecturally designed to hold 40,000. Ebbets Field was just a small ballpark built really on the garbage area in Brooklyn. There was an intimacy with the crowd. Today's ballparks, the crowds are like wallpaper. They make sounds, but you're not rare of individuals. So that to me is the biggest single difference between modern day baseball, big stadia, and then Little Ebbets Field.
Number 10.
It's October 4th, 1955. 3:45 p.m., and you're the only one who's ever been able to say these words. Ladies and gentlemen, the Brooklyn Dodgers are champions of the world.
Right, and that's all I could have said. Had I tried to say something else, I probably would have broken down. I was so happy for those players whom I knew well, whose frustrations and anguish I knew well, because I'd been with them since 1950. So when they finally win, I really felt for their happiness. It was a marvelous feeling.
You're going to hear Vin Scully talk about April 18th, 1958. By the way, that was Tom Verducci from Sports Illustrated talking to Vin Scully. But this is opening day. Dodger Stadium is not built yet. This is at the LA Coliseum the first couple of years. This is April 18th, opening day in the Coliseum. 3 months earlier, Roy Campanella was confined to a wheelchair because of the motor vehicle accident. Number 12.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Vin Scully speaking to you from the Los Angeles Coliseum as opening day has finally come to Southern California.
I've been asked several times now already, what will you miss the most when you retire? I said the crowd, the roar of the crowd. It absolutely enthralled me when I was 8 years old, and here's a kid in a walk-up fifth-floor apartment in New York. I'd crawled under the big radio we had in the living room. It wasn't the teams or the players, the roar.
Next.
That really started me in the direction of broadcasting, and I was about eight. So now, when I'm in the booth, Kirk Gibson hits a home run, the place goes bananas, I shut up. I sit there, and for that little moment of time, I'm 8 years old.
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
I remember talking to Gene Crawford in the operating room one day, and he said, notice how Vin Scully, when he calls a home run, when the Dodgers hit a home run like we saw last night, he always says, she is gone. Not he is gone, but she is gone. Maybe they call hurricanes always by girls' names because it's a her. It's not a himicane, it's a hurricane. But why does Vince Scully call the baseball and the home run, she is gone? Something to think about. The power of the wheelchair, the visualization by Vince Scully of Roy Campanella. Suddenly the chair became a throne. Quincy Jones made the most incredible music using the Moog synthesizer, Ironside, because he hears the power of the wheelchair. Coming up next, we're going to get into the true power of the wheelchair in sports. The great David Davis, his book is called Wheels of Courage. I can't wait to talk to him. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors Show here on 710 ESPN.
You're listening to the Weekend Warrior Show, presented by Cedars-Sinai.
What's going on, L.A.? This is Kobe Bryant.
I got two words for you. Forget about it.
Start your weekend off right, listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
You got the little buzzer, the red light, green light buzz.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
Quincy Jones, welcome back, Weekend Warriors. I'm so excited to talk to my next guest. He's my favorite sports author, the great David Davis. We talked to him before about Duke Ahanamoku, and now he has a new book that you just can't put down called Wheels of Courage. David, thanks so much for making time to be with us.
Great to be here, Dr. Clapper. How are you?
Good. So what do you think about Ironside and Roy Campanella?
I had never heard that story about Ironside. That's impressive research, and I'm going to have to read more about that. That's very amazing.
Well, we're going to be talking today about the heroes that changed the world and made the world a better place, the men and women who destroyed Nazi Germany, and at the time the Japanese, and won World War II for us. But many of them came back with injuries from mines, bullets, and all kinds of things, and they were paralyzed from the waist down, and they're in a wheelchair. So my best Clapper vision for the Weekend Warriors to kind of understand what paralysis is to really understand what your brain, your spinal cord, and the nerve that goes to your pinky finger in your hand is all about. If you look at your hand right now, many of you are driving, so keep your hands on the steering wheel, and you say, I want to change my grip on the steering wheel from here to here, or I want to adjust the radio volume, the thought in your brain gets translated into a motor function of turning the dial. But by the same token, if in going to the dial, you touch that hot cup of coffee that you have next to you, the information that it's a hot cup of coffee is going back to your brain. Just as your brain is having the message, turn my fingers to turn the dial, from your brain to your finger, information of how hot the coffee is going from your hand back to your brain. So my best Clapper vision is the 405 freeway. You've got cars going into the San Fernando Valley and cars going out of the San Fernando Valley trying to come south. The 101 is a 90 degree barrier to the 405, but we need the 101 to go east and west. So if Glendale is your right leg and Ventura is your left leg as you're going up the 405 freeway north, if a truck violently jackknifes and knocks out the 405 freeway in both directions, you ain't getting to Glendale and you ain't getting to Ventura anymore. You're not getting information in or getting information out. So when you're paralyzed, you not only can't make your legs move, but you can no longer feel that you've been sitting too long, and you better move because you're going to get a bed sore otherwise. You lose the information in both directions. That's a clapper vision for paralysis. How's that, David?
That's excellent. I appreciate that. As you well know better than me, it's such a sophisticated, the spinal cord, the central nervous system, it's such a vital, important, complex part of the body. And it's not so easy to explain just all of the roles and myriad functions that the spinal cord carries out with the brain, alongside the brain.
Exactly. And then you have a separate part of the brain where thinking is not involved. You and I are breathing right now. Our diaphragm moves. That's function that we don't think about. That's the cerebellum, but that's at the base of the brain. So you talk about a complicated computer. The greatest computer that will ever be made is the one that sits above your shoulders. Let's get into the book. First, Dave Davis, how did it come about that this was a topic you decided to take on? The paralyzed World War II veterans and creating the league, the whole idea of basketball in a wheelchair. Take us back to the aha moment for you when this came about.
Well, you'll get a kick out of this, Dr. Clapper. It was when I was researching the book about Duke Kahanamoku, believe it
really?
Or not. Yeah, remember in the 20s, Duke Kahanamoku, that was the only time he spent outside of Hawaii. And he lived in Southern California, and, you know, he was surfing here. He was trying to make it in Hollywood as a actor, not very successfully, unfortunately, because of his skin color. But you know, he was a member of the Los Angeles Athletic Club, and he was still considered an Olympic hero because of 1920 and 1912. So the 20s in Southern California happened to be a boom for swimming pools, both backyard swimming pools, you know, among the Hollywood stars, but also institutions and colleges, UCLA, USC, that sort of thing, Occidental. And when they would build a swimming pool, they would invite people like Duke Kahanamoku to come in, and the opening ceremony, Duke and other Olympic heroes and divers would jump in, and, it, you know, they'd get a little media buzz, right? One of the places he did this was in the town of Corona, you know, out about 50 miles east of Los Angeles. And there was a crazy place called, I'd never heard of it. It was called the Norconian Resort Supreme. And it was this lavish, amazing spa, health. They had golf courses, a lake, you know, beautiful clubhouse, all that sort of thing. Unfortunately, it was opened right at the Depression, and it soon fell into disrepair. And in 1940, and this is where we get to what happened, the aha moment, 1940, 41, they sell it out of bankruptcy to the U.S. government with the idea that it will become a hospital, a naval hospital. They knew that we were heading towards war, in other words. And sure enough, this amazing, lavish spa becomes a naval hospital. And I'm, again, just sort of reading the background on this because of the Duke Kahanamoku book, and I run across a team called the Rolling Devils, and they're acknowledged to be one of the first wheelchair basketball teams ever formed. And that was when I said, okay, I'm jumping down this rabbit hole. I want to know more about the Rolling Devils. And, you know, 4 years later, here's the book.
Whenever I read one of your books, I'm talking to the great David Davis, who's written a book called Wheels of Courage, and I encourage you all to get this book. Whenever I read a book you've written, Dave Davis, all I can think about is the old days of the librarian coming up to me because I'm reading a Neil Simon Odd Couple play in the library, and she's coming up to me to say, we're closing in 10 minutes, and I just cannot stop reading Neil Simon's Odd Couple. And I feel like you're in the library someplace, because this doesn't really exist, this world, anymore. And the librarian is telling you, Mr. Davis, we're closing, you're going to have to leave. And you physically can't leave whatever it is that you're reading. Is that happening?
That sounds like a clapper vision for sure. I love libraries and archives. They are vital, and I spend a lot of time in them.
You know, when I was encouraged to become a sculptor in marble by my wife, who said after our 10th wedding anniversary, you know, you're a great surgeon and you really love this stuff. I bet you're a great sculptor. So she gave me an UCLA extension catalog, and I enrolled in this class from 7 to 10 at night on a Wednesday night. This is a long time ago when I started. And I remember, I don't know if I'm going to like this or not. I love Michelangelo, but I didn't know, I never sculpted before. The class was from 7 to 10 at night. And I remember looking up at the clock at 7 o'clock at night, and the next time I looked up at the clock, it was 10 o'clock. 3 hours was like 2 minutes for me. And the operating room, by the way, is the same thing for me. I'll start in the morning and I don't realize, but it's now 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It just seems like a minute or two. But you just get so into it. Yep. That's what I feel whenever I read a book that you write, because you take us with you into the depth. And at 2 o'clock and at 2:10, this happened. And then he said this, and she, it's awesome. And it's a skill. It's a gift that very few people possess. And what do they say? You want to have a happy life? Find the gift that God gave you and share it with the world. Thank God, Dave Davis, you share it with the world.
That's very kind of you. And as you said at the outset, I mean, this was a type of story that you do get immersed in because it had so many different variables. But at the heart of the story is a story about recovery. It's quite frankly, a medical miracle that these guys survived and lived. And the miracle was not just about these men, the veterans, the paralyzed veterans, but also the doctors and the physical therapists who, for the first time, revolutionized the care of paraplegics and also quite a few of the quadriplegics who managed to survive. And that had never been done before. You know, as you well know, before World War II, if you were paralyzed, and particularly, let's say, World War I, 80 to 90% of the time, you were going to be dead within 18 months or so. Mm-hmm. And again, as you well know, it wasn't necessarily because of the injury. It was because of sepsis and, you know, disease bacteria from bed sores or kidney or liver problems, issues that emerged. And part of that was because there was lack of care by the doctors. They would put the patients in a full body plaster cast, which you know is sort of the worst thing that you could possibly do. The paraplegia, they called them no hopers and dead enders because they knew they weren't going to survive. And that's because, you know, in the days before penicillin and sulfa drugs, they couldn't combat the bacteria and the diseases that would attack the body when someone is so weakened by a physical injury to the spinal cord.
What I'm most fascinated by is how sports yet again brings us together as a society. We're all so different, but sports brings us together. The Dodgers last night brings us together as a society. The Lakers winning the championship. Here is how sports enters this world of hopelessness and creates hope. Can you stay on? I just want to pay some bills. We'll come back. I want to get into how basketball enters the life of these young men and women who are paralyzed. Can you stay on for another segment, Dave?
Absolutely. Thank you, Dave.
All right. Weekend Warriors, what a treat to be able to talk to this man, the great David Davis, who written a book called Wheels of Courage, which I encourage you to get. We'll talk more to him coming up next on the Weekend Warriors Show here on 710 ESPN.
You're listening to the Weekend Warrior Show, presented by Cedars-Sinai.
What's going on, LA? This is Kobe Bryant.
All right.
Start your weekend off right, listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
I'm Big Clap.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Now, why would Steve Paulette be playing Leslie Gore? It's my party, and I'll cry if I want to. Maybe she was a Clipper fan. No, Quincy Jones produced all four of her hits, and that's one of them. The same Quincy Jones who heard the power of the wheelchair and made the song Ironside because of it. Genius. I'm talking right now to the great David Davis, who's written a book called Wheels of Courage. David, why wheelchair basketball? Tell us, take us through how the World War II veteran in a wheelchair, the hopelessness of it all, learns about playing basketball in a wheelchair and how this ultimately changes the world beyond the VA hospital.
Yeah, it's a great question, and it starts here in Southern California, in Van Nuys, at Birmingham VA Hospital, which of course no longer exists. There was a gentleman there, a physical therapist by the name of Bob Reinierson. He was the son of a coach, and he noticed that the veterans, the paralyzed veterans who were in wheelchair, would come around the gymnasium and sort of watch the games and sort of give half-hearted attempts afterwards, wheel their chairs onto the court and sort of pass the ball around. And he got the idea of, let's organize these guys into a sport, a team sport, and see what happens. And I think you'll appreciate this. In some ways, we look at basketball and we value height in basketball, right? You know, Shaquille O'Neal, AD, all of these guys. And so you're thinking, wheelchairs, how does that compute? Well, a couple things. First off, the floor surface, it's perfectly flat and really conducive to with a wheelchair, even the old school wheelchairs that they were using back then. You know, you could move around pretty easily, and it was a big enough court, you know, to have 10 men in their wheelchairs. But I think here's where it gets into the rehabilitation, which is what the doctors were so concerned about and happy about, that there was this element. Think of basketball in terms of, if you don't have your legs, which of course is such a powerful attribute, it's all about the chest and the shoulders and the arms and working those muscles out. And as you well know, that is so important for someone who is in a wheelchair. You know, to get themselves out of bed. You know, they have to sort of muscle themselves out of bed to maneuver around, even to wheel the wheelchairs back then because they were all manual. So in a sense, basketball was sort of the perfect sport because it was a workout, and it was also, I guess the other benefit was, you know, upstairs, psychological. And that gets to, you know, here are these young men, you know, most of them in their 20s. Some of them had been married before the war, before they went into service. Some of them not. They're young men, and here they are in the prime of their life, and they're not able to play, you know, quote-unquote able-bodied sports. Here's a chance of a sense of normalcy that, you know what, there is going to be a normal life, a normal lifespan. And we're going to make the best of it. And if we have to play sports in a wheelchair, well, so be it. It's still going to be fun and competitive and working up a sweat. And that's sort of the genesis. It was this combination of medical rehabilitation, but also with this psychological element to let's get these guys up and going and making them feel better about themselves as they start to move on and deal with this new normal that they're going to be dealing with for the rest of their lives.
It's almost as if that vet in a wheelchair having such joy and such drive is the antidote to a person who is able-bodied, who says, I'm having a bad day, I'm depressed. You get inspiration when you see someone playing basketball in a wheelchair. My first day at Sloan Kettering, big cancer hospital in New York, I'll never forget this as a resident orthopedics, this is in the 80s. The x-ray tech, in those days it wasn't digital. You literally had to dip x-rays into chemicals to develop the x-ray. And I, you know, saw a bunch of patients in the clinic and I ordered x-rays. And the next thing I know, here's this African-American guy in his white coat running around, touching all the surfaces because he's blind. And I'm going, the x-ray tech, he's blind? And I said, this is incredible how he's running around the clinic, touching everything to kind of figure out where it is. And before you get to say, I feel sorry for him, I said, do you mind if I go with you into the developing room? He goes, no problem, Dr. Clapper, come on. And I follow him into the door closes. Now, to develop an x-ray, like to develop film, you need it to be dark, pitch black, because any light will expose the film. It is ruined. So it has to be, they call it the dark room. And there's a red light. That's the only light, which really doesn't count as light. You really can't see anything in the dark room. Soon as that door closed, Dave Davis, he could run around the dark room like it was, he knew where everything was, and he was so able-bodied, and I was the blind person. And I remember that moment where, you know what? I can learn a lot from this man who can't see. And it's the same thing for you. You can learn a lot about the happiness in your life when you research and learn about someone who now is going to be in a wheelchair, who before this World War II was running around playing basketball like some of the characters you described. I want to know, how did it go from being in that Reinerson gym to take off as a league, as competition that affected beyond the VA system?
Yeah, and as you mentioned, it starts in the VA hospital. That team I mentioned from Van Nuys, they eventually become known as the Flying Wheels. They were a special team. They raised a lot of money with Hollywood celebrities who donated their time and money because they were into these guys and were rooting for them. They actually were able to use a plane that was Howard Hughes allowed them to use one of his planes.
Wow.
Every year they would barnstorm across the nation and they would play. First, they would play other teams from the VA hospital, you know, teams of paralyzed veterans. But they would also play, as you mentioned, you were blind in the dark room. Mm-hmm. They would play able-bodied teams who would borrow wheelchairs for the occasion.
Wow.
And they would beat their pants off because, you know, these guys didn't know how to manipulate a wheelchair.
Wow.
And drew thousands of people. You know, they had a key game. Actually, it wasn't the Flying Wheels, but near and dear to your heart, there were two VA or three VA hospitals in the New York City area, including one in Staten Island. That team played a team from the Massachusetts VA in Madison Square Garden. 16,000 people, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, and the news media covered this. They made the cover of Newsweek, et cetera, et cetera. All of which is to say, that sparked this drive that it could have athletes who weren't just paralyzed veterans, but others. And as you well know, at that time, late 40s, early 50s, you have the polio epidemic. So some of the first teams, as the veterans leave the VA hospitals and start settling down in their hometowns or wherever they settled, sometimes near the hospitals, a lot of them settled in Southern California, as a matter of fact, to be near the hospital, first in Van Nuys and then in Long Beach, they would form teams outside the hospital. And oftentimes they would take a polio patient or two who would be in a wheelchair or perhaps an amputee. And that's how it would spread. And eventually some of the, there actually was a gentleman in Illinois at University of Illinois who decided to form a league and start a tournament, and his name was Tim Nugent, just a you know, an amazing character, and that's how it spreads outside the VA. So the VA, the veterans start all of this, and they're involved for many, many years, and still are, some of them, you know, obviously other more recent veterans, but that's how it sort of spreads outside the hospital setting.
Dave Davis, what a joy it always is to talk to you. I cannot wait till the movie comes out because someone needs to make this into a movie. But you could just feel the excitement just listening to you talk. And you are a person who truly makes the world a better place. It's a real honor and a pleasure to have you join us this morning. Thanks so much for making time.
Oh, thank you for having me, Dr. Clapper. Great to talk with you.
What a pleasure. The book is called Wheels of Courage. Dave Davis, don't miss it. All right, Warriors, coming up next, I'll take your calls. The number is 877-710-ESPN, and I want to take you into the operating room of a fascinating knee surgery that I did yesterday and also a shoulder surgery. Can't wait to open the clinic, give you some Clapper vision. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on 710 ESPN.
You're listening to the Weekend Warrior Show, presented by Cedars-Sinai.
What's going on, L.A.? This is Kobe Bryant.
I'm winning. What are we winning at?
Start your weekend off right, listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
The game of life. That's what we're winning at.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
It don't matter where it is, if you win a championship, a bubble, Miami, you know, Golden State, it doesn't matter. When you get to this point, it's one of the greatest feelings in the world.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. That's the great LeBron James, who brought Los Angeles a championship. He's a Laker now. He's accepted now. I love it. You're listening to the music from the Sandals, The Endless Summer. Sunrise is much later in the morning, so I'm surfing more and more in the moonlight. And I surf with my friend Ed, who has eyes like an eagle. And he could see the wave long before I could see it. Here they come, Robbie. I'm going, where? I can't, it's pitch black out there. Next thing you know, I'm getting clobbered by some wave. But it is an adrenaline rush, no doubt about it. All right, the lines are all lit up. I can talk for hours, but it's important to hear you guys. Let's go to Chad in Pasadena. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Good morning, Dr. Clapper. How are you?
Very good, Chad. How old are you? What do you do for a living?
I'm 49 years old. I'm a radiology account manager for Philips Healthcare.
And, nice.
Yeah, I have a.
You're a number cruncher.
Actually, yeah, I'm. I sell MRI equipment to facilities all throughout Los Angeles.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a car salesman for over 40 years after he got out of Vietnam.
Wow! So you can totally relate to today's topic about guys injured in a war and how they have to manage afterwards. Good for you. How can I help you, young man?
17-year-old son, baseball player.
Yes.
Over the weekend at a tournament in Arizona, dives for a ball, gets up to throw, foot slips, feels a little tightness in the behind in the upper calf, behind just below the knee, in the back posterior. And a little bit anterior on the outside of there, not where the iliotibial band goes, not that far out, but it's just tightness, no burning, no pop, no sharp pain, just tightness. So the question is really symptoms for comparing muscle injury versus tendon or ligament injury.
Any swelling in the joint?
No swelling in the joint. I was pushing in the right behind the knee where, you know, kind of the anterior cruciate and the posterior would be, and there was nothing there. I've torn both of my ACLs, so I was trying to see if he had any of the pain, intense pain and popping that I had on both of mine. And he said no, just tightness in the upper.
You would classically hear a pop, feel a pop, and because there's a blood vessel in the ACL, you would see swelling right away, which is why we run on the field immediately to examine the knee before it gets swollen. But he didn't have any swelling. But I will tell you, sometimes it walks like a duck, sounds like a duck, it's a duck. Having a dad who tore both his ACLs is in his genetics. So this may be an atypical, let's hope it's not, doesn't sound like it because of what you described. But guess what your son needs? He needs MRI. The very thing that you do for a living. He needs an MRI, period. He does not need dye injected, which is painful. He needs an MRI, and it'll be my pleasure, Chad. You get the MRI, make the mafia or the broken health system we have. You tell him you had a second opinion already with Dr. Clapper. Get an MRI, and next Saturday you'll call, and I will translate it with Clapper Vision for you. But listen, he's playing in a tournament. He's serious about baseball. If he was a Dodger, he'd be getting an MRI. I intend to treat him no differently than if one of the Dodgers was in my office. So that's what has to happen.
Great. I appreciate it. He had great care at Cedars-Sinai for a torn labrum that he had over the summer, and that's
great.
100%, and things went really well, so I really appreciate it.
Information empowers us, Chad. That's all we're doing. Tell him not to be nervous, but that way he can go to sleep. You can go to sleep at night knowing. Listen, it's not a perfect test, but it's a damn good test.
Yep.
He needs an MRI without dye injected, and then check in with me. That's what I would do with my son, your son, who I'm treating as if he's my son, knee.
All right. I appreciate it. You have a good time out there on those waves.
Okay. Thanks for listening, Chad. I appreciate it. And do me a favor. I just helped you. You're a total stranger. I want you to find a total stranger today. Do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me.
Sounds great.
All right. God bless you. All right, Warriors, I leave you with Volare. Next week, we're going to have a great show next week. We're going to talk all about mentoring. You want to be a doctor? How are you going to become a doctor? How are you going to learn about it? We have a program at Cedars on mentoring run by Dr. Jason Cohn. He's my guest next week. Oh,